I'm Jenny Galluzzo, co-founder of The Second Shift. Welcome to our podcast where we talk all things women, work, and well-being, how they intersect, our competing forces, and how to create and maintain personal and professional alignment in your life. Let's do this. Kara Alaimo is the author of Over the Influence, Why Social Media is Toxic for Women and Girls and How We Can Take It Back. If there is one thing that freaks me out, it is the impact of social media and how out of control it is for women and girls. And I love this book because there's so many ways in which social media is insidiously negative. And we know the ways it is for girls, right? It's in the press all the time. But for women, for mothers, for the guilt and the shame and the negativity that people are already feeling, the overwhelm, what happens online just amplifies that so much. And even if you know better, or even if you're like, oh no, I'm opting out, it's there. And I hear it among friends. I see it happening online. I see it happening in my own life, and especially in how we interact, or I interact with social media for The Second Shift, and how hard it is to fight against the tide, knowing that you're doing the right thing, but you're also losing out on what might be better for business. And so this book is really about all of the ways that social media is playing women and what we can do about it, the resources that are available, and how we can be aware, because some people aren't really aware of what's going on. So pay attention. Thank you, Kara. And I hope it gets better out there for women and girls if we become more aware of what's going on and how to fight against it.
Your book, Over the Influence, is all about the toxicity of social media, but specifically to women and to girls. And I know that a lot is said about girls, and it's much more obvious, I think, in some ways, because we understand eating disorders and mental health issues, and we understand the comparison and just, you know, sexuality of it. So we're going to put that aside for a minute. But let's talk about women, because sure. I see in my own age demographic where even though we're smarter and we understand what social media is doing, it's still a very toxic place to go to in your own head. And it has enormously negative effects to grown women.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So one of the things I talk about in Over the Influence is the psychologist Marisa Franco's argument that we're living in a time of friendship famine. And so certainly before television and before all of these phones and social apps landed in our lives, people were much more connected. And now it's actually more common to be isolated in our society. And I think social networks give the impression that you're connected to a ton of people, but one thing you and I know, of course, is that what we really need is a couple of really strong friendships. It doesn't need to be a lot, but needs to be those close relationships. It's actually more important for our health than diet and exercise, according to research. And so I think there's a way in which social networks can stand in as a placeholder for these relationships. Then there's all of the abuse we're up against online. And so, you know, this comes as a shock to many white men, right? That women have to worry about shocking, shocking forms of abuse on these social networks. And then, of course, there's all the other biases we're up against. So when women use social networks to try to bolster our professional profiles, research shows that we often end up with fewer followers, fewer reposts, and fewer resulting opportunities than the men in our fields, because people don't turn to women for expertise in the same way. So there's just a lot that we're up against.
It really is such an unbelievable bummer, because there are so many good use cases for social media. And I'm one of those people who's like, okay, well then just get off it, you know, and I've taken breaks from it. But the truth is that it's nearly impossible. So much of my job at this point is involving social media, different platforms, whether it's, you can call social media lots of different things. LinkedIn is a social media
network
platform. So it isn't really feasible, just the same way it's not feasible to tell your kids, like, you're never going to use social media. And even though I know better, it doesn't mean that, and I've read all the books and I understand all the things with digital citizenship and things like that, it doesn't mean you don't get sucked in. And I want to point out the ways in which social media is particularly damaging to women.
Yeah. So first of all, I think you're exactly right about this. I've heard from so many women on my book tour who tell me, you know, I just find social media use deflating. And I completely understand if you make a life choice that Instagram is not a positive force in your life and you decide not to use it. But what gets me really upset is when people tell women, well, if social media is so toxic, just stop using it. And that makes me really angry, first of all, because social networks are also places where we can empower ourselves, right? So there are places where we can find jobs or get involved in important causes. And so we shouldn't have to give that up. But secondly, I don't think that that so-called solution would work anyway. And the reason is because even if you and I stopped using social media, there would still be all of these misogynists on social networks who are sharing extremist views that I believe are making women and girls less safe offline. And so I think we're seeing a lot of the harms that are happening on social media now spilling over into what we used to call real life. I find that term to be very antiquated and dangerous right now. So that wouldn't solve the problem. But yes, as women, I think we are up against a lot on social media. Part of it is that people perceive women as emotionally vulnerable. So, you know, catfishers target women on dating apps. Or misinformation is targeted specifically to mothers because everyone knows that if your child receives a devastating medical diagnosis, a mother is going to do anything in the world to help her child, even if that's, you know, spending thousands of dollars on quack essential oils that don't really work.
But those are two examples of things that are particularly predatory and insidious. But there's other things that are, I guess, even more insidious, right? It's like the comparison and the way that the algorithm works, the things that are said that are most outrageous or polarizing or fear-inducing are the things that get the biggest reaction. So being told that you're doing a really shitty job as a parent, being told that you're doing, you know, that motherhood, you have to be doing all of these things. And if you're not doing it, and here's how I make the lunch. And if your lunch doesn't look like my lunch, you're a bad mom. Or, you know, here's how my outfit of the day that I took my kid to school in. It's the thief of joy where you're looking at other people's existence. And even if you know it's not real, and even if you are told, you know that you're a good parent, it doesn't mean that constantly being bombarded, and it's suggestive, right? So the more you're in it, the more you're seeing that you're being told over and over again that you're doing a bad job, then it just makes women feel guilt and shame and bad about themselves. And it's defeating. And that in itself is just like a nightmare to live in.
We
do it to ourselves enough.
Well, that's exactly right. And society tells us that, you know, that we're not good enough and judges us uncharitably enough without the added addition of social networks. I completely agree with you. So what's really interesting is that I interviewed many women influencers for my book. And we all know that so many of us walk away from social apps feeling less than, right? Because these mothers seem to have it together and they have these pristine homes and these well-behaved children. And we know that that's not the reality of a mother's life. The really interesting thing that influencers told me is that they're exhausted by all of this too. But the problem for them is that they know that if they want to attract brand sponsors, they need to keep up this facade, right? As I say in my book, who wants to buy products so that you can look like a harried woman with a messy house and misbehaved kids? Exactly, no one, right? And so these women influencers feel an incredible amount of pressure to sort of perform perfect lives, even though their lives don't look like this too. And then for those of us on the other side of it, you know, we're left feeling like we can't catch up. And it's been super interesting to me that I've had a number of therapists in my audience at my book talks, and they keep telling me how their clients need to hear this, how their clients keep coming to them, you know, and saying, you know, I spent all day trying to get a great shot of my baby and it didn't work out, and, you know, and I'm devastated about this. And so that's one part of this. And then the other part that you mentioned is the algorithms. One of the stories I tell in my book is of a woman who asked me to call her Vivian, and she tells me that she got her eating disorder on Instagram as a teenager. She was an early adopter of the platform when it launched, and she loved yoga. So she started posting pictures. She posted a picture of herself doing a handstand, and that picture was picked up by a so-called FITSPO page, fitness inspiration, if you're not familiar with the term. And she was quickly sucked down a rabbit hole of toxic, toxic content. And even today, as a woman in her 20s, she continues to struggle with an eating disorder, even after intensive treatment. She also works as a physical trainer and says that her clients come to her and pull up pictures and say, I want to look like that woman. When we know that the so-called Instagram body can usually only be achieved through surgery. And so, you know, I argue in the book that society has been judging women unfairly for a very long time, since the time of Eve, but that social media has made things worse in terms of both the way other people judge us and the way we judge ourselves by just absolutely flooding our feeds with these filtered, unrealistic images of other people's bodies and other people's lives.
Let's rewind this, because I also feel like there's a lot of women, specifically in my generation, which is like sort of not digital natives, who don't really, and whose children are digital natives, but they don't really get involved in, let's say, a TikTok world. And they don't really understand what the algorithm is and how the For You page works. Really specifically Instagram and TikTok. How it works, how they catch you, and then how they keep feeding you that information and suggesting you down different pathways. So if you could just sort of break that down for us, that would be really helpful.
Yeah. So the way that algorithms are programmed is to show people what they think they want. And so the Center for Countering Digital Hate did a really interesting study. They pretended to be a 13-year-old girl and searched for content about mental health and body image. And within minutes, this 13-year-old girl was being promoted ads for things like tummy tuck surgery and weight loss drinks. And they just kept flooding her with more and more body image and suicide content. And so these algorithms peg you, and then you can very, very quickly fall down a rabbit hole. So I've heard from so many women on my book tour who tell me that they feel ill-equipped to help their own kids handle social media because they don't know how to use TikTok. And I keep saying, you don't have to know how to make a killer TikTok in order to help your children understand these dangers. So even if you're not on TikTok at all, just by reading the media, you would probably know that what's been trending lately on TikTok is things like Sephora kids and Botox babies content, telling 10-year-olds that they should have full faces of makeup and telling 20-year-olds that they need Botox, which is, of course, a terrible idea. And you can have that conversation with your daughter. Hopefully you've had that conversation already, but the talk about why we shouldn't judge anyone, but especially ourselves for our appearances. And so I think even if you're not on these platforms yourself, you can keep up with pop culture, even just by reading the traditional media and have a sense of what's going on.
But if you do have children, you should be on social media and you should be checking out their For You page, because it's very interesting. If you don't know how to go to that, it's not like who you follow. You go to the search and then you see what they're following so you can know what they're getting, so that you can be aware of where they are and what they're being served up. Because we all know, like, if Instagram tells me to buy some cream or a bag, a travel bag or something that they've decided that I need, if they tell me enough times, I'm buying the bag. So if that's, for me, a 46-year-old woman who understands how this works, you know, that's why I see all these little girls who are, you know, full faces of makeup, and like all they want to do is shop constantly shop. The consumerism is out of control. And as the mom of two young boys, what I see there is very different because all they're served up are like stupid pranks and things about sports.
It's very different. And one thing
it's very, very different. And it's very sad and scary because there's misogynistic and sexist stuff that some of the pranky joke stuff that the boys get is not great, but there's nothing that's like wildly scary and dangerous or like messing emotionally with their psyche in the way that I think with girls, it's much more destructive.
Yeah, no, I think that's right. And one thing I tell parents is sit down with your kids and look for content on social media. So we know that social media can be a place where women like Vivian develop eating disorders, but it can also be a place where your kids develop interests that turn into careers or get involved in an important social justice movement. And so it's really all in the end about how they use it and what they're consuming. So I think it's a great idea to sit down with your kid and look for content together. And the beautiful thing about that is that if you look for a particular kind of content that's in line with your kid's interests, that will send a signal to the algorithm that they're interested in it. And so they'll be promoted more of that type of content, most likely, even when you're not with them. And so that's a really, really great way to start to actually alter algorithms and teach your kids how to look for healthy content. I think you're absolutely right about the difference between the kind of content served up to boys and girls. But one thing that I am very worried about is how these platforms promote misogyny. So there was just a couple of weeks ago.
Well, that's what I was going to bring it back to when you said it's in real life, that some of the stuff that's happening online is now infiltrating in real life and how. And I was going to ask that, is misogyny and some of the ways in which behaviorally men and women are acting, replicating itself in real life from how they feel free to behave because it's anonymous online?
Yeah, that's exactly right. So first of all, these algorithms are actively promoting sexism and misogyny. There was a study just released out of London that asked teen boys in the UK what kinds of terms they typically search for on TikTok, and then set up TikTok accounts and searched for these terms. Things like fitness, loneliness, the kinds of terms that teen boys are interested in. Within 5 days of searching for these terms, the amount of misogyny on TikTok's For You page quadrupled. And so boys are being actively fed this. And I think, you know, years ago, it used to be the case that extremist misogyny was segregated onto these dark corners of the web where men got together to complain about their hatred for women and their grievances with women and say things that they really probably couldn't have gotten away with saying in other parts of society. But what we've seen over the last 6 years or so is that this kind of misogyny has spread over onto mainstream social networks. And so it's just what you're telling me your sons are seeing, right? Now it's a common part of youth culture on TikTok to quote unquote joke about violently abusing women. And that's really unique compared to other forms of extremism because teen boys are generally not on TikTok joking about, say, beheading people. And I think what that's doing, of course, is normalizing violence and abuse towards women and girls offline. So just one indicator, the CDC put out their youth risk behavior survey last year, which found that between 2011 and 2021, there was a significant increase in the percentage of teen girls who said that they'd been forced to have sex. And when I think about what can account for this as a communication professor, I have to think about the large literature that tells us that exposure to violence in media is correlated with committing acts of violence. So people who are exposed to this kind of violence are more likely to commit it. And I think we're absolutely seeing now the spillover into the offline world.
That's so horrible. And I do think, you know, this is just me pontificating for a second, but I do think that the way that the boys that I've seen are served up the misogyny is like vanilla version. It's not like Reddit chat room hate, you know, incel culture. It's like, here's a bunch of stereotypes and jokey teenage boys making fun of girls or their moms or, you know, and it's innocently spoon fed to them in a way. And I think because our culture has become so like woke and there's so much cancel culture and the kids are so afraid and they're taught to live this sort of like almost shadow life. Like they know how to behave on the outside because they don't want to get in trouble. So then it's like this naughty world that they're living in that feels good to them, that it's like this like inside joke they're all on. And so it's this like double life that they have, and it's bad. It's just bad because they resonate much more with the naughty instead of like understanding that they're not getting in trouble because of something like that. That's, I don't know, that they should aspire to good behavior and being a good citizen, not like hiding this, like, ooh, this is so funny, and we're really going to joke about these horrible things.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. It's presented as jokes. And, you know, I guess for me as a woman, it's really sort of hard to see the hilarity in these jokes about things like, you know, a woman looking like roast beef after being violently abused. I mean, that's the kind of stuff we're talking about here. It's almost hard for me to stomach.
It's awful. It's just awful. So, okay, what can we do besides just like burying your head in the sand and deciding that this isn't happening? And I try very hard to like make my feeds things that are inspiring to me and unfollowing things and just curating it very closely. I've also seen firsthand how like if you hover on something that sparks your interest, even if it's something that is in a negative place, you're going down that rabbit hole. So it's like also training yourself, don't do it. Don't fall prey to the thing that they're trying to suck you in with. But what are some other ways besides, you know, that behavior modification that we can live better and happier lives online?
Yeah, well, I love that you do that, Jenny. And, you know, every chapter of my book ends with a section called What We Can Do About It. And obviously, I have huge demands for lawmakers and tech companies. But ultimately, I think that if we all radically change the way we use social networks, we could solve some of these problems overnight. And so what I call on all of us to do is, first of all, make a conscious effort to follow more women, knowing that women often get fewer followers and less attention on social media. These days we know, you know, a follow is like a vote. It helps determine who has power in our society. So I've actually put a list of feminists to follow on my website, which is just caraalimo.com. They're just the
I think is awesome, by the way. And I love your list. And I hope that you'll add the second shift to it because we are super positive. We stay out of negative discourse completely.
I would love to, Jenny. But you know, they're the tip of the iceberg, but it's this brilliant, diverse group of women doing amazing things in the world that I think people should know about. And I'd love to have you on there.
Thank you. You also highlight something called the She Source database. What is that?
It's a database. It's really meant for journalists, but it's a database of women experts on tons of different topics. So if you're interested in a particular topic, that's another great place to find women who often have social media presences. And then also, I think we have to think mindfully about what we click on, what we share, and what we amplify, right? So post about issues that affect your life. And then the last big thing is to rethink what we do when we witness sexism and misogyny online. So I know it can be very tempting for me when I see a woman being abused online to reply. But as we've been discussing, that will send a signal to algorithms that people like that content and want to see more of it. So the better thing to do is to report it to the social network you see it on. Now, social networks are notorious for either not responding to these reports or for responding and telling women that the rape threats they received didn't violate the terms of service. But the point is that if we all did this in mass, it would send a very powerful message to social networks that we don't want to see this kind of content on their platforms. I'm also a big fan of positive slamming, which is when if you see someone abused online, she probably doesn't want to make her abuse more high profile. She probably doesn't want you tweeting about it. But what you can instead do is post something positive about her. Maybe it's a compliment about something she did at work. And then last but not least, if you know someone who's posting sexism and misogyny online, have an offline conversation with that person and explain to them why you think it's wrong. The feminist Loretta Ross calls this calling people in for respectful conversations. And because ultimately we have to socially stigmatize the practice. But I think if we all did these three things, we could radically, radically change what social networks look like and really use them to empower ourselves and other women.
I also think it's incumbent upon businesses and people who are influencers and who have platforms to think about the content that they're putting out and how they're saying things and whether or not they're using fear and negativity as a hook and bait to get people and more likes and more followers, because the message and the intention may be very good, but the way that you're getting the attention is having a negative impact on the people that you and society. And I see it happen. And I personally know from my platform, The Second Shift, like anytime I've experimented in putting something that had like a negative bent or was polarizing in any way, that thing skyrocketed, got these users who were engaged with it, and boosted me in the algorithm. And that's great. And it's really tempting to keep doing that because you want the followers, because, you know, to get a book deal or get a, you know, get somebody to pay attention to you or have, you know, land on the page of, you know, most important, whatever it is, you need followers these days. So it's this terrible cycle. And so I have made a very conscious effort not to do that, to the detriment ultimately of what I think would be a bigger audience. But I'd rather have the audience that this gets to in the proper way than the wrong audience for the wrong reasons.
I love that. And it's so true. We see this starting with teen girls. One of the first things they often realize when they join social networks is that the easiest way to rack up likes and attention is to make yourself look hot. So that's how we see young girls sexualizing themselves at shockingly young ages on social networks. And I know that if I wanted to up my follower count to get a bigger book deal next time around, yeah, posting conspiracy theories would be a great way to do it, right? Because content that gets people angry or emotional in some way tends to be what goes viral, whether or not it's true or whether or not it's a good idea. But we all have to resist that. And I think it's important to remember that if we all started posting content about issues that affect our lives, algorithms would show everyone more of that, right? If we sent that signal that that's what we need to see. But sometimes it means overcoming a lot of subconscious biases that cause people to be drawn to very, very problematic content.
Well, I'm so glad that there's books like yours out there and that people are having this conversation and using their platforms to make others aware of what's going on and what they can do about it. So thank you so much. Such a pleasure to talk with you. I mean, this is such an important topic, but also one that like really speaks to me as a woman who deals with a lot of other women and also a mom of teenagers.
Thanks, Jenny.
Take care. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for joining the conversation. For more, you can follow along at thesecondshift.com. Please rate, review, subscribe, and help us make work work for you and for all women.